Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for January 5th, 2018. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the best movie moments of 2017. This is Peter Shorta, and joining me on today's podcast is...
Jacob Hall.
Brad Oman.
Ben Pearson.
Hi, Chen Bui.
Chris Evangelista.
We got it right, guys. That only took about five tries. Today, we're talking about the best moments of 2017's films. There's a big article on slashfilm.com that has been written by most of the Slash Film team, and it is great. You should go check it out. Because we're talking about the biggest moments of this movie year, we're going to be spoiling some big moments in movies. Obviously, you probably have not seen all the movies of 2017, but we're going to start with the bigger ones and go to the smaller ones. To help things, we'll have a time code in the show notes. So if you don't want to hear something, we'll give you some proper warning. But if you don't want to hear something, you can skip around with the time codes in the show notes. But we will try to keep this as it's not spoiler free because it's filled with spoilers. But we're going to do our best for you, okay?
Spoiler friendly as possible.
Yeah, spoiler friendly as possible. So Ben, why don't you start this off?
Sure. One of my moments is the ending of Split. So if you've not seen Split, skip ahead for a little bit. But for me, the very end of Split is definitely one of 2017's biggest, like, holy shit moments, in which it's revealed that, hey, spoiler alert, it was an Unbreakable sequel the whole time. So I'm sure the first batch of audiences who went into this movie having no idea that this connection existed, their minds must have been completely blown. I knew it was coming, and it was still a really cool moment seeing Bruce Willis's character from Unbreakable pop up in a diner at the very end when they're talking about James McAvoy's character in Split. And the whole thing is basically just a setup for Glass, the upcoming sequel that's hitting in 2019. And it joins these two cinematic universes together and sort of recontextualizes everything that you've seen before in Split and sort of lets you know that the whole thing has been set in this superhero adjacent universe.
Brad, your number one pick.
Yeah, well, this is one of the biggest moments out of any of the blockbusters this entire year. And that's, of course, Luke Skywalker's last stand in Star Wars, The Last Jedi. It is such a pivotal moment for a number of reasons, the biggest of which being this is the end of Luke Skywalker's time in the Star Wars galaxy, at least as a living person. And he does so many things in the third act that resolves his character in such a beautiful way. He pays a visit to his sister Leia. He gives a cheeky wink to C-3PO, and finally he becomes the legend that Rey and the Resistance need him to be by facing off with Kylo Ren in the middle of this salt desert on Crait. And he basically makes it appear as if he can't be defeated and creates this legend, this image that will be the spark that actually brings people to support the Resistance and fight against the First Order again. It is an incredible moment, especially because of the reveal that Luke Skywalker's not actually there. He's projecting himself from Ahch-To using the Force, which is a revelation that all three times that I've seen the movie, the audience has erupted into applause. And it's an incredible moment, and it really brings Luke Skywalker as a character to a close in a way that I am more than satisfied with, and it's one of the things that I love the most about The Last Jedi.
Chris, what is your first pick?
My first pick is the final moment in the film It. So I'm a really big Stephen King fan. I was very excited about this film. And one of the reasons I loved the film adaptation of It so much is because it understands that to get Stephen King right, you need more than just the scares to work, you need actually to have the characters work, because Stephen King is really good at building his characters up. Even like characters who appear only briefly, he's very good at giving them backgrounds in his books. And this film really gets that. And it does a really good job of establishing, you know, these seven kids, the Losers Club, and making them seem, you know, like endearing characters, really characters you care about. And the final scene of the film is them all saying goodbye to each other. And I actually just rewatched the movie last night because I got my Blu-ray copy of it. And even I've seen this movie three times at this point. And again, this ending just hits me really hard in that, just the way it's handled, where, you know, one by one, they all sort of depart and they're all saying goodbye and the summer is over. And the film really hammers home this feeling that, you know, all these kids really have is each other. You know, they're outcasts, they're losers, they're misfits. And the movie really gets how important it is when you feel like a misfit, how good it feels to find someone else who can be like a misfit alongside you. And I just love that the film gets that so well. And it really, you know, the best moment in this movie for me isn't a scary moment. It's this emotional moment at the end.
So my first pick is the most pivotal moment in Diana's arc in Wonder Woman, and that's No Man's Land. And it was a scene that was famously nearly cut from the film, but it is so pivotal, because it is the birth of Wonder Woman. So it's her moment of becoming, of taking on that responsibility to wield her extraordinary power for the greater good. And she does this by, you know, shedding sort of these clothes that she's been placed in that are sort of like the embodiment of the patriarchy and everything, and deciding to step out onto no man's land, which is the stretch of land between the Allied soldiers and the German soldiers who no man has ever crossed. And it's quite a little on the nose that, you know, the first person to cross it is a woman, but it's so powerful because it is Wonder Woman, because she not only steps out and tries to go across to save this village that's under siege by the German soldiers, but she inspires all the other soldiers behind her to also finally make that first step and fight the good fight. And it's a wonderful embodiment of Wonder Woman as she is, in this inspiration and the sincere, hopeful hero who is, in her best moments, the perfect inspiration for other people.
My first pick is the silencer shootout from John Wick Chapter 2. This comes about halfway through the movie. It's when John Wick returns to New York City and a hit has been put out on him, this massive bounty. And every single assassin in this crazy world of assassins, this is where everybody seems to be a trained murderer, comes out to get him. And it's this montage of him fighting off all kinds of killers from all different backgrounds, getting the crap beaten out of him, but always coming out on top. But it climaxes when Cassian, an assassin played by Common, who's really great in this movie, shows up to kill him. And they start stalking each other through a subway station, both with silenced pistols, both holding the pistols like in their jackets, casually firing at each other from the hip, while the crowd around them does not notice that they're in the middle of a gunfight. It's preposterous, and it's hilarious, and it's just this perfect John Wick moment. It has all the style, humor, and action that makes these movies so good and so entertaining. And it just, the fact that it comes in the middle of a montage full of other incredible action beats just makes it all the sweeter. And the scene goes on even beyond this, but I think just a moment, just a few shots of Cassian and John Wick having a shootout in a crowd of hundreds of people and nobody noticing is one of my favorite action movie moment of 2017.
I would agree. My first pick, I would argue, might be the biggest movie moment for me in 2017. And it's surprisingly from a Marvel film. It is Peter Parker meeting the parents in Spider-Man Homecoming. So if you haven't seen Spider-Man Homecoming, you know, fast forward. During the movie, Peter Parker has had these exchanges with Adrian Toomes, the Vulture, Michael Keaton's character, and he's also, you know, obviously trying to chase Liz, go to the dance, and it's kind of like you know, you see all these detective stories where there's oftentimes two stories that you think are completely unrelated, and then at one point late into like the second act, you realize that they are completely connected, and that's what makes this surprise so great, that Peter Parker shows up at Liz's house to pick her up for the dance and realizes that her parents are, you know, the Vulture, his, you know, enemy. And the scene that takes place following that of Toomes driving them to the dance is just filled with tension. It's, you know, classic, almost like Hitchcock, you know, the bomb is underneath the table, and when is it going to go out, you know, do the people know? And like, it's the realization of Toomes and then Peter, and then, you know, the awkward, it's just, when I saw this moment in the theater, I was like on the edge of my seat with like the biggest smile on my face. It I think it was one of the best movie moments of 2017. But let's go on from Spider-Man to a past Spider-Man actor. Ben, what is your movie moment?
Yes, so this is an audition scene from James Franco in The Disaster Artist. This one isn't too much of a spoiler. It's sort of shown in the trailer a little bit, but there's a scene where James Franco, who's playing Tommy Wiseau, the star of The Room in the film, attempts to audition for a casting director to, you know, get an agent or try to, you know, play this. I think he's trying to audition to play a professor, like an all-American professor. And even though he is overly confident, as Tommy Wiseau tends to be, he is hilariously incapable of dropping whatever mysterious accent that he has. And Casey Wilson, who's playing the casting director, is really great in the movie at just sort of being this confused, befuddled person who is trying to understand what the hell Tommy Wiseau thinks he's doing in this audition room. The whole scene is funny and sad at the same time, which is sort of a microcosm of the movie at large, where it sort of juxtaposes these ideas of you know, going and chasing your dreams, but maybe not quite having the talent that you need to achieve them. But yeah, it's one of many, many fantastic moments in The Disaster Artist.
And up next is Brad's second pick, which is a giant spoiler for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So if you have not seen the movie, fast forward now. Brad.
This was such a surprisingly incredible movie moment, simply because the character at the center of it, I never would have anticipated, would have elicited so much of an emotional reaction from me based on his role in the first movie. And that's Yondu's funeral in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, simply because Yondu is turned into a character that you can't help but feel sorry for and fall in love with in Volume 2, because of how he's treated by the Ravagers, how much he cares for Peter Quill, aka Star-Lord. And you see that he is this makeshift father for Peter, albeit a flawed one. And so it makes his death that much more harder to deal with once, you know, Peter realizes how important Yondu is to him. And the funeral is such a beautiful moment. Not only is Chris Pratt's monologue touching, charming, and even a bit funny, but then Yondu gets this big send-off when the Ravagers actually show up and you know, sound the horns and display the colors that he deserves for a Ravager funeral. And it's just, you know, with Cat Stevens playing in the background, it is a beautiful moment. And I would never have believed that this would be something that would, you know, touch me so much after watching the first Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's just a great scene created by James Gunn.
Yeah, very emotional moment. And up next is the ending of Florida Project. So if you have not seen Florida Project, again, fast forward. Chris, tell us about the ending of Florida Project.
Yes, so Florida Project is my personal number one film of the year. And the whole movie is very, you know, it's down to earth and realistic. And then the last few moments find themselves in this sort of fantasy sequence where the setup of the whole movie is, you know, it's these impoverished people living in this rundown motel in Florida, really close to Disney. And Disney is always sort of like looming in the background of the whole movie. And at the very end, Child Services come to take this, you know, the young star of the film away. And, you know, Sean Baker, the director, he keeps mounting the tension, and it's getting more and more tense. And you're basically on the edge of your seat because, you know, something bad is going to happen really soon. And pretty much, it seems like almost out of nowhere, the little girl, her name is Mooney, she runs off to find her friend who lives in another motel. And together, they basically run towards Disney. And the whole movie just sort of becomes completely different here. Sean Baker, he shot this whole sequence on an iPhone with a rolling shutter, which gives it this sort of like sped up, surreal sort of quality. And, you know, it's giving the film a happy ending in a sort of false way. It's Sean Baker saying, you know, there is no real such thing as a happy ending for these characters. So the only way they're going to get a happy ending is through this fantasy sequence where they basically just invade Disney and, you know, the Magic Kingdom is just there. You know, the castle is there. And that's, you know, it's a fairy tale ending where there is no real happy ending to come.
You know, even though I don't love the execution of that ending, hearing you describe it is making me emotional. And talking about emotion, HT's next pick is a very emotional moment from Coco. Of course, if you haven't seen it, fast forward.
Yeah, so this is the emotional climax of Coco. It's the part where, spoilers, like Peter said, Miguel has made his way back to the Land of Living after... his adventure in the Land of the Dead. His family had sort of reunited in the Land of the Dead and had helped him come back before the sun set or the sun rose. But this came at a price because as he was leaving the Land of the Dead, his great-great-grandfather Hector, who he had just discovered was his great-great-grandfather. It had been sort of his companion throughout his adventure, and there was a big revelation that he was in actuality related to him. So he... Hector was on the verge of being forgotten by his daughter Coco, who was the last living relative who remembered him. And there's this concept in Coco where a character in The Land of the Dead can have a final death in which they are forgotten by all the living people in the world and thus are basically non-existent. And it's a really sad and real concept that is kind of Pixarified, but it's beautifully done. And Miguel, realizing that he could lose Hector forever in the living and the dead world, he runs to his mama Coco to try to get her to remember. But she at this point is suffering from dementia and is non-responsive to him. And everyone who, all of his family who he's reunited with are scolding him and berating him for disappearing. And he is only left with the emotion that his great-great-grandfather will soon disappear and he dives into the arms of his parents. But he accidentally nudges the guitar that he retrieves from Ernesto de la Cruz's tomb. And that guitar used to belong to Hector. And so he sings the song that Hector had written for Coco to try to get her to remember. And throughout the process, as he's singing and he's trembling and crying, Coco finally sort of wakes from her daze and starts singing along with them. And it's this beautiful emotional climax that deals with, that encompasses all the themes that Coco has dealt with before, which is loss and their and memory and legacy. And it's just, it's a wonderful, small, intimate moment that is made large, which is what Pixar really does best.
And I would argue that there is no greater tearjerker than that moment in Coco. And it's a 1-2 punch for, you know, what happens then and what happens, you know, seconds after that. But let's go on from that to Jacob's number two choice.
My second choice is from Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Martin McDonagh's very dark, very funny, very sad, tragic comedy. And it happens very early in the movie. It's after Frances McDormand's character has erected three billboards outside of her small town, accusing the police of not doing their job and finding the man who raped and murdered her daughter. And then we also meet Sheriff Willoughby, played by Woody Harrelson, who we quickly realize is a stand-up guy. He's smart, he's funny, he's well-respected, and the movie doesn't ask us to pick sides. So when he takes Mildred, Frances McDormand's character, into the interrogation room of the police station to say, hey, why'd you do this? And these two smart, witty, righteous people who both have their own perspective and are both right in their own ways have this showdown. And it's funny and it's tense. And it's Martin McDonagh writes very stylized dialogue. So it's a little theatrical in the best of ways. And then Willoughby sneezes, and there's a spray of blood from his sneeze that lands all over Mildred's face. And what we know, and what other people do not yet, is that Willoughby has cancer, and he's dying. And in that moment, Willoughby, this sort of posturing, tough guy, cocky sheriff, starts apologizing and sort of becomes a shell of himself and seems to, like, shrink before your very eyes. And Mildred, rather than taking the moment of her enemy's weakness, immediately gets up, checks Steve's okay, and runs to get help. And it's the movie in a microcosm where, as dark as things get, as much as you may hate somebody, as much as you want to get revenge or tear something down, at the end of the day, we can only move on by reclaiming our humanity and being good to each other. And the rest of the movie is all these characters falling and failing and struggling to be good to each other and to find goodness. And the movie doesn't necessarily decide that they find it, but this early scene suggests that it's there and the only way to get by is to be good to each other.
Second choice for best movie moment is probably the best joke out of any of the jokes in any of the films released in 2017. And that would be the 9/11 joke in The Big Sick. I think this joke has been in some of the marketing for the movie, so I'm not sure how much of a spoiler it is. And if you haven't seen The Big Sick, you should go to Amazon right now. You should, you know, stop this podcast and just go do it, watch it. But it's, you know, a moment where Camille is there with his ex-girlfriend in the hospital. She's in a coma, and he's there with their parents, and it's very dramatic, filled with drama, and it's this joke about, you know, one of America's greatest tragedies that is so funny and so fitting. I remember seeing this at the Sundance Film Festival, and people were laughing for, I think, like 20 seconds after the joke. I couldn't even hear what was going on in the scene. It's one of the funniest. It is the funniest moment of 2017's films, I think. But let's go on from that. Ben, tell us about your next moment.
Yeah, mine is a joke that I think rivals that one, which is the Game of Thrones joke in Logan Lucky. This movie has not really gotten a ton of attention. It sort of came and went, and it's a fine movie. But this joke in there, where the movie completely comes to a halt for a couple minutes during this jail sequence, where Dwight Yoakam's character, who plays the warden, is basically negotiating with the inmates who have taken over the prison, and they are demanding access to the George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire book series, and he has to explain to them the reasons that Martin has not completed the trilogy because of, you know, he had a busy what was it? Some sort of like a punishing, I'm trying to remember the exact phrasing of the line and I can't write the second, but anyway, it goes into he's like reading from the Wikipedia page, you know, reciting this information to these inmates who are suspicious and they don't really believe him, but they know that the TV show has gone beyond the events of the books. It's really, really great. And actually embedded a video clip that you can watch the whole thing. Even if you haven't seen Logan Lucky, I'd recommend going to definitely check out our full list of these movie moments and just watch that video clip out of context, because it's funny even if you don't know what else is going on in the movie.
And all three of Brad's choices are from some of the biggest movies of the year, and his third choice is also from a Marvel movie. Brad, what is your third choice?
Yeah, this is a moment that I honestly wish there was some way that it couldn't have been spoiled by the marketing, but then, I don't know, it would have been very hard to get around the fact that it's such a big part of the movie, and that's when Thor and Hulk reunite in Thor Ragnarok. It was something that was teased right away when the first trailer came out, that Thor was going to be facing off with Hulk in a gladiator arena on another planet, bringing in elements of Planet Hulk into the fray. And the moment is just so great because not only is the fight between these two incredible, but the moment when they actually meet is played with such perfect humor by Chris Hemsworth. Like, his reaction is so excited and earnest and genuine, and it's so hilarious. He's so pumped that Hulk is the one that he's supposed to fight, and the line, you know, where he says he's a friend from work, and everyone's like, what the hell's going on? And then Thor like recounts all the bad things that have happened to him in the past couple days, losing his hammer, and all the you know, his father dying, all these things, and then Hulk just doesn't give a shit and just wants to fight, and then they get into it, and it's just, it's such an awesome moment, and I can't only imagine how cool it would have been to have sat in the theater watching Thor Ragnarok and having no idea that Hulk was going to be in that movie. That has to be a cool thing, and I hope that some people, maybe kids who are not aware of marketing and maybe their parents save it for them, are able to experience one day without having that spoiled for them, because it's such a cool moment.
Yeah, and it should be mentioned that that moment was created on set. A Make-A-Wish kid was visiting the set and came up with that line on set, which is just perfect. But next up on the list is we're going to get weird with Chris.
Yes. My pick is, this next pick is the famous or infamous pie eating scene from A Ghost Story. So A Ghost Story premiered at Sundance, last year, and almost immediately at the premiere, the only thing anyone kept talking about was this scene where Rooney Mara eats an entire pie. And it took me a while to finally see the film. And I finally did. And even though I knew the pie eating scene was there, it still stood out. It stands out for two reasons. One, it's just very strange to watch Rooney Mara eat an entire pie. And apparently she had never eaten a pie before, which is also very weird. I guess, I don't know, she comes from a very wealthy family. Maybe they don't eat pies in wealthy families. But so that, on one level, it's very strange. But on another level, there's also this like undercurrent of, you know, sadness to the scene, because it's set right after she comes back from the funeral of her husband, who is played by Casey Affleck, who spends pretty much the entire film covered in a sheet as a ghost. And, you know, she's depressed and she's sad. And, you know, the only thing in her house is this pie that someone brought over. And it's sort of like, you know, an attempt at comfort food, where she's, you know, she just wants to feel something other than sadness. So she forces herself to eat this entire pie, and it backfires because she ends up running to the bathroom and throwing it all up. So, you know, on one level, it's a very amusing scene to watch her eat an entire pie, but it's also, you know, it's sad that, you know, no matter how hard she tries, that she can't really get rid of that sadness, you know, even with binge eating.
I can only imagine someone sitting out there that hasn't seen this movie and is listening to this is thinking, this movie sounds so weird, and it's actually weirder than I think you'd get the impression right now. But let's move on from that to a moment from one of this year's most critically acclaimed films. HT, tell us about it.
So this scene from Call Me By Your Name is actually not one of the critically acclaimed scenes, one of the scenes you'd expect in a critically acclaimed film. It's Armie Hammer dancing really badly to an 80s pop song, and he's wearing these dad shorts and obviously has no dancing skills, but it only lasts about a minute long, and it takes place after Armie Hammer's character Oliver has recently arrived to the Italian villa where Elio, Timothy Chalamet's character, and his family reside, and Elio brings Oliver out on a night in the town, and they're all having fun and dancing, these beautiful people in this beautiful countryside, and it's kind of interrupted by this really funny scene that has launched a million memes. If you check on Twitter, there was a Twitter account that basically set this scene to various songs of just Armie Hammer dancing badly to many pop songs, and it fits, actually. But there's another sort of undercurrent to this scene as well, sort of similar to the pie scene from A Ghost Story, and it's about kind of this feeling of longing and yearning that Elio is grappling with, because he's there to have a good time with his girlfriend, and he at the same time is watching Oliver dance and dealing with these feelings that he doesn't quite understand and doesn't quite know how to process. And it's just kind of seeing Oliver with another woman dancing, he becomes sort of jealous, slightly turned on, and it's an interesting mix and tumult of emotions that you see across Timothy Chalamet's face in the matter of seconds. And it's wonderfully understated scene, as is the rest of the film, but it's kind of buried within this really funny dancing that Armie Hammer does.
And next up is Jacob's final scene.
Yeah, this is from the last scene from the movie Raw. So if you haven't seen Raw or plan to see it, I would really recommend not listening, because this is the punchline to the whole movie. And it, but it's so good. And even if you hear it here, watch it anyway. But Raw is a horror movie, but it's also a movie about leaving home and going to college for the first time. And it follows a young girl named Justine, played by Garen Smellier, who's amazing. As she goes to veterinary college, grapples with her loneliness, grapples with homesicknesses, and learns that she's also a cannibal and starts eating human flesh. And it's really gross and really amazing. And at the end of the movie, she goes home. A lot of bad stuff has happened. She's grappled with a lot of personal baggage. Her family member is in trouble because of her actions. She's not sure if she's going back to school. It's all a very sad moment. And she's sitting at the kitchen table with her father, who we've barely seen. We saw him very early in the movie. He starts talking to her about when he first met her mother and how difficult it was to begin their courtship. And then he opens his shirt and reveals he's covered in bite marks and scars and gaping wounds from years and years and years of his wife eating his body. And he tenderly tells his daughter that she's going to find a way. It's going to work out for her. And simultaneously romantic, because this guy married a woman who was a cannibal and stuck by her side, let her eat off of him, and stuck with him and made their relationship work, damn it. But at the same time, it's super disgusting. It's a really, really amazing, jarring moment. And then once you see this reveal, once he tells her things are going to be okay, movie cuts to credits and it's over. And it's also a great metaphor for how your parents' baggage, in your genetic or otherwise, lingers over you. And Justine didn't go to college and decide she wanted to be a cannibal. She's very much her mother's daughter. And her dad gets that and tries to make her feel better about it, even though it's a really horrifying image. And, man, I saw this movie maybe a year and a half ago when it first premiered in festivals in 2016. And even in 2017, when it was released properly, I have not forgotten about this shot. It's just burned in there, and I love it so much.
And my final movie moment is from Valerian in the City of a Thousand Planets. I know probably you have not seen this movie. No one has. I'm not going to say I recommend it, but it does have at least two must-see moments in the film, including the opening, which is spectacular, and you can see online. But there is an action sequence in the film, and I don't think this is a spoiler, where our two heroes go to this big market, which is in the middle of a desert, and they have to recover like something. And Dane DeHaan's character wields these gloves and glasses to reach through to another dimension where they are visiting this big market, this big alien market. So it's an action scene that takes place in two different dimensions at the same time, and it's intercut. Things are happening in our reality, and they're also happening in this other reality that he is seeing through these kind of like VR goggles. And it is insane. It's only a thing that like someone like Luc Besson could have brought to the big screen, and it makes me so happy. It sucks that this movie is not a better film. It sucks that it kind of like the second half kind of falls into cliche nothingness. But I think everybody should see this movie just to see the scene, because it's just so inventive and so cool. And by the way, this list that we're doing on this podcast, I just realized it's probably like the worst fear of all these people that were emailing us about spoilers, because everything we've talked about today has been like some kind of big reveal or some kind of big moment. So I'm wondering if any of those people actually got to the end of this episode. But if you want, you know, we've only mentioned a dozen of these scenes or these moments from these films. And on slashfilm.com, Jacob and the team have compiled a list of 56 best movie moments of 2017. So there is a ton more. You know, obviously this year was filled with some great movie moments. I would urge you, go to slashfilm.com, read that article. It's not just a great compilation of movie moments, but it's well written from the entire team, and I was barely a part of it, so I can say that and pat the team on the back for this one. So that leaves us at the end of the episode. I would have everybody say where they can find more of their work, but it would just take 10 minutes. So I'm just going to say you can find everybody on slashfilm.com and on Twitter. You could search their names and find them there. You can find a link to that full list on slashfilm.com and in the show notes. If you want to email us, send us an email, peter@slashfilm.com. You can find this podcast, Slash Film Daily, published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Please go to iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review, and we will see you next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.